Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from some undisclosed location because I'm doing a little bit of traveling, but I'm online, and anyway, I'm waiting. My guest didn't call in yet, so I'm going to talk to you for a while, and I hope he's calling in. This is the fun thing about live radio. These things can happen. I'm really excited to talk to him. His name is Chad Boudreau, and he was on the program January last year. That book was called Scavenger Hunt. And at the time, I remember he had said it's a one-off. I said, no, it can't be a one-off because it's just too good. You found the characters. And I was surprised that he wasn't already planning a sequel because it's just so good. But it was his first book. Okay. All right. Well, I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Chad Boudreau. And I was just talking about you, Chad. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I was just telling my people as I was waiting for you to call in that we talked a year ago on the release of your first book, which was so exciting, Revenge Hunt. Scavenger Hunt, although there's a bit of revenge in that book, but Scavenger Hunt, I don't know if you remember when I talked to you, you were very excited because whenever book one comes out, the first book published, and you were so excited. I remember I told you, I knew it would be a series. I told you it had to be a series because you cannot come out with such a great character and not have a series. I fell in love with Blake Hudson. And then, of course, he had a dog named Judge. I knew it, that it had to be a series. But when I got the new book, which is called Homecoming Queen, I was a little surprised. I think book one, Scavenger Hunt, took quite a few years to write. I don't know how fast you did this, but it's nice that you come out with a new book so quickly.
That's great, yeah. The Scavenger Hunt series is coming. But in the meantime, we have Homecoming Queen, which really is a book I've wanted to write for, you know, more than 10 years. I think the characters in that book are, of course, they're not scavenger hunt characters, but they are really amazing and will leave readers, I think, wanting more from them. But I would think Homecoming Queen is expected to be a one-off. And then soon we'll have a book probably called Mob Justice, where you'll see some scavenger hunt figures return.
I knew that. If you had a smart publisher, he would never let you stop with just one book in the scavenger hunt because it's just, that is so great. So we'll talk about that, but let's concentrate on the new book because Homecoming Queen, it's also just, it's a great book and it's coming at the perfect time, hurricane season. Right now, everybody's concentrating on hurricanes again. And why don't you set the scene for it? First of all, I have to say, I love a book that starts with a map. Ever since I read Treasure Island, if there's a map at the beginning of a book, I know I'm going to enjoy it.
That's so funny you say that, because I've heard that from several, and particularly my beta readers for this book. They love the map. Homecoming Queen it takes place in a town in South Texas. And the protagonist is a young woman named Annika Raven, who is introduced as the former homecoming queen of her high school. She's returning to her hometown after a few years to rescue her little sister from a neglectful family. When she does that, they get caught up in one of the largest hurricanes coming through the Gulf of Mexico. Really, the thriller behind the book is they're trying to get out of town and they just can't. And there's a lot of things that keep them there, and the struggle to get out is really the foundation of the book. From the very beginning, you're holding on and trying to figure out how Annika's going to do it, if she's going to do it, and meeting characters along the way that either make it harder or easier for her to succeed. So that's Homecoming Queen.
Annika is a great character, and of course, her little sister's name is Sam, Samantha. As you said, you had this idea in your head for a long time, and tell us, this is an area where you grew up, so this is something very familiar to you, right?
It is. And then a lot of the emergency preparedness and hurricane issues that are embedded in the book are things that I have expertise in from working in government. But those two things combined, I think, really set the scene for a very action-packed and tense storyline.
If you want tension, throw in a hurricane, and that will do it, because for those people up north who have not lived through a hurricane, it changes you when you go through a bad one. And I lived through a bad one where I had to move 800 books out of my living room to an inner room because I didn't have hurricane windows. I know what it's like to go through that. When you were young, did you go through some bad hurricanes?
I did, and I'll start by saying that in South Texas, many of us grew up measuring time by hurricane. I grew up with my grandfather, and he would say, back when Hurricane Celia hit town, or back when Hurricane Allen hit town, and those were big hurricanes that changed really their life during those periods of time. So he wouldn't say 1972 or 1980. He would mark them by when the hurricanes hit, and a lot of people have that psyche in that area because it is a game changer. And for those who haven't experienced hurricanes before, there is a psychology behind it of you start as a young age, you get out of town, your family hopefully gets out of town when they tell you to, and then over time, there'll be some hurricanes that don't live up to their expectations, and then you think, I can ride this one out, and then that's when the big one hits, and you have everybody in town. And so you get a little bit of, actually a lot of that, in Homecoming Queen is really the culture and the psychology surrounding weather events, large weather events in that area.
I was born in northern Michigan in a blizzard. And a blizzard is a terrible thing and you go through it, but eventually it melts and the buildings are all still there. Everybody's mostly around because we were prepared for blizzards. But in a hurricane, when it's over, you can walk out the door and entire streets can be gone. And of course, people. So that's why it's so memorable when you go through a hurricane.
No doubt. And then one of the things that I found during my research was, and again, my books aren't meant to be political by any means, although you can't take politics out of major issues. But in this book, I learned that most of the big hurricanes over American history have occurred during Republican presidential administrations. Just a fun fact that I stumbled across for that. But even when you think back to Wilma and Katrina and Rita, and then most recently those that we had under the Trump administration, those have changed not only lives, but demographics within cities. And so it really does speak to the magnificent, in a bad way, impact that those hurricanes have. It's devastating.
Now, in this case, for Anika, she's been away from town, and let's explain why it's called Homecoming Queen, because that's what she was. In a little town, the Homecoming Queen is a big deal.
It's a really big deal, and people look up to, particularly young women and girls, look up to the Homecoming Queens in these towns. And so part of the mystery is why she left and why she came back, but the title itself is a little bit of a double entendre, because it's Homecoming Queen is what she was, and then she is coming back home. And the way she is received, is it differs depending on where she goes. But as the story progresses, you see her starting to figure things out, things that she had never known before. And you see what she's all about and how her character evolves throughout the story. But I think by the end of the book, you get a good sense of why we call it Homecoming Queen.
For you, being raised in that area and looking at your own life in a small town, it was a big change when you left the small town.
No doubt. It was. Now, I will say that there'll be many people from my hometown listening, and it's an amazing culture down there, very much a true melting pot. And so we all had our different callings. And for many of us, though, in that South Texas town, we were the first generation to go to college, and so that was certainly my experience. And then getting out of college, and then not too far removed from college, going up to D.C. to work for the Department of Justice, and then soon after the Department of Homeland Security, was very interesting. But I will tell you this, my best friend in sixth grade, who also was in Corpus Christi at the time, he ended up having pretty much the same job that I did, in a different presidential administration. And we were, again, best friends in sixth grade. We had both written for our sixth grade paper. And I hadn't talked to him in probably 25 years after we graduated. And I'm sorry, 17 at the time. But in any event, I found out that he was the chief of staff for the Department of Homeland Security after I left. And I called him and I said, you've got to be kidding me.
Oh, my goodness.
It was very interesting, and you never know. It's a small world, and small-town people coming from a small world and in a pretty big environment.
And they make it big. Now, were you the homecoming king?
No, definitely not.
Were you the valedictorian?
I was not the valedictorian either, certainly not for that school. We had some very bright people. And you know what? I was that kid who was very happy to make it through high school and get on to the next level. So I had a lot of fun in high school, let's put it that way.
And you've come a long way because, well, touching a little bit back on, I'll stay with Homecoming Queen, but I want to go back definitely to talk about scavenger hunt because that is so fascinating. But with Homecoming Queen, I think what people will find in this book, in addition to the excitement of being in the midst of a hurricane when there are other problems around, and poor Aniga has problems. She's facing such a, when you have to take on the responsibility of taking a sibling and taking care of a sibling, this changes your life.
No doubt. No doubt. And I think for Annika, she's still very young, and she's taking on some responsibilities that are foisted upon her. And I think for me, and really approaching the character, it was first very important to understand that she comes from all the good things of all the most intriguing women in my life, and then she also has all the bad things for me. She is, we don't like to use the word complex character, but she has a depth about her that is very unpredictable. But then, at least for me, it is really an outlet for a lot of the things that I like to say that I don't, and a lot of things that I like to do that I don't, and all the bad stuff that she has to work through, trying to maintain that responsibility and composure is one of her biggest challenges, despite everything else she has to deal with.
Yeah, she's really young. She's only, what, 4 or 5 years out from the time that she was a homecoming queen. And homecoming queens are, I remember the homecoming queen. Have you gone back for reunions, high school reunions?
Not a reunion, but I go back. I used to go back from time to time.
Well, now you're famous.
Meet people there.
But homecoming queens, I'm not sure that it's the best thing to put on a girl. At the time, they're so happy, but it sticks with them and it stays with them. And they have something to live up to. And no matter what you say, homecoming queen is still, as I said, a big deal. And if you don't get to that point where you marry the rich homecoming king, you're like, you've lost something before you even started in life.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's so many things, too, that the fall from, it's not really a fall from grace, going from being the top person in your generation in a city and then leaving and coming back years later to find what she found, I think is part of the intriguing part of the story. I will tell you that I had beta readers. The beta readers for this book, unlike Scavenger Hunt, national security thriller, we had beta readers from the industry that would look at it. For this one, I had, in particular, two women that I admire greatly that I grew up with in the same town that are now in Hollywood. And one of them is an actress. One of them is a successful executive for a movie studio. And they read the book and really focused in on what does this particular young woman, what does she bring to the table? And they were very good about directing me in certain directions that otherwise I probably wouldn't have thought of. I knew coming into this, writing as a male, writing on a female protagonist, I needed to have some very good counsel, but it had to have been a young woman in the story. There's no other way I could have written it. And they did a fantastic job, I think, of helping me shape.
That's what I was going to say. You really get into writing a female character. It works very well.
That's great to hear. That's great to hear, because that was probably my biggest challenge. I felt like I had a great story. I felt like the writing would carry, but I didn't know if I could pull that off. So I'm very thankful that you said that.
And nowadays, you don't know if you're going to get criticized for doing it, because it is really crazy that in this publishing world, there are people who say, if you're not this, you can't write that. If you're not this, you can't write that. And I've heard a man can't write a book about a woman. And then I thought, oh my goodness.
And that's why, that's why you have to choose your publisher wisely, because the decisions that I make actually with respect to who publishes my book is based on how much latitude and license I have to tell the story that I need to tell. And I'm not an artsy person. I don't have to demand that everything goes my way. But the whole creative process is that you have a license to work without so many rules. And that's how your story is developed and how it grows and how it delivers. And so I'm glad that I'm thankful for my publisher that allows me to operate with, they have a morality-based code of honor that I subscribe to. But other than that, I have license to write those stories that I want to write.
That's great, because that's so important. And it's getting to be a shrinking option in this business, because they are censoring more and more. And many people have actually lost careers because they have not been able to work around it. It comes back to the fact that, one, you're a lawyer. And I love how, as you say, so many people from your small town are so successful. And this is America. This is what happens. We come from these small little towns in the middle of nowhere, but something sparks us. We start reading, or we start taking school seriously or something. That's the beauty of it. We're not all from Harvard, that milieu of Harvard. So I think the very small town nature and the characters that you've developed, of course, you've developed them, but they are based on real people, and that's apparent.
Yeah, I think people who say that their characters are not based on real people are fooling themselves, that they're being truthful. I think we live in a world where we have to be careful of biases anyway, but if you think that you can write a character that is not based upon your perception, that's silly. So I can't really think of a character that marries up to a particular individual, but again, when you read about Annika and Sam and Curtis Warden, some of the characters in this book that are so rich, that is a amalgamation of qualities and characteristics that I have observed in people that I like and that I don't like and that I give grace to and that I don't. And they all make their way into those characters.
And somebody like Cyclops.
Oh, yeah. And what a character he is. You know,
yeah.
Cyclops.
What a character.
He's this anchor in town that's been there for years, part of the leader of the old timers, and really a sagacious and a character, very much the Texas character that you would see. Really, Texas is divided, in my view, into five different zones, and they all have different cultures and environments and really landscapes. But all of those characters make their way into Cyclops. He is the true Texas archetype.
Exactly, and I like that. It does. When you're writing in this, where you're talking about your area of Texas, you really bring it out. And that's important, because it sets a tone for so much. And I thought Cyclops was a great name. And anybody who reads this book, they'll remember, I think, Annika, because that's a great name, by the way, Annika Raven, your main character. I like that name. And then, of course, remember Cyclops.
He's hard to forget if you've read the story. And really brings out, I think, a lot of rich character in him. But I think you hit on it. The richness of South Texas is not something that most people understand fully. And so I tried to capture that and paint that picture the best that I can. Everybody who is not from Texas will have some type of image of Texans, and whether it's politicians that they've seen or characters and movies or what have you. But the Corpus Christi South Texas culture is so much different than the other cultures. It really is, like I said, a melting pot. There is a lot of a Latino culture that is in a part of that, and then a Texas culture. But your Texas, so you can see somebody with a cowboy hat on the beach. So you have a lot of one. We always wanted to be LA before LA, but it's a very different place.
It is. I have a nephew who lives in South Texas, so I've been there.
Yeah.
And it is different. It is not Dallas, I tell you. It's not Dallas or Austin.
No doubt.
You capture the essence of the area. You have wonderful characters, a great story. And as you said, it has this, we need to find out what happened to her. Why did she leave that town? And a little bit about also what happened, not just to the homecoming queen, what happened to the homecoming king. And so it's just all around a great story. And now, since we know that you weren't the valedictorian and or the homecoming king, you still must have been something, because you decided to head off. And this is what I really found funny. That's one of the reasons I mentioned Harvard, is I want to ask you, for people who haven't read the first book, I want them to know that, first of all, you got to the Department of Justice in an interesting way. But when you got there, you actually worked with Michael Chertoff, which is so amazing, because, of course, he is Harvard all the way. He opens his mouth and you know he's from Harvard. And so I was wondering for you, because you come from a smaller background. Well, how shall we call your college? It wasn't the Harvard of Texas. Was it to work with him?
First of all, I would say that for those Scott Turow fans, Scott Turow was classmates with Michael Chertoff at Harvard Law School. And if you ever read 1L, you can probably figure out the character of Michael Chertoff in that book. He is probably the smartest person I've ever met. And he reads books like Good Will Hunting. And yeah, he was Harvard undergrad, Harvard Law School, and then editor of the Law Review. But there are certain people that I've met over my years that if you thought you were smart, you're humbled very quickly by the intellectual horsepower that they have. And so I love it when those folks dedicate their lives and careers to serving our country in meaningful ways. And so working for him was, I will tell you, really a blessing for me, because we really didn't have anything in common other than our legal background and the fact that he was wanting to serve our country in a very meaningful way at a very critical time in our nation's history. And there was not one day that I worked for that man that I ever had to deal with politics or gray areas. It was just, what a fantastic, you know, job where you can wake up and have meaningful things, front page of the paper, and you don't have any political pressure at all to do the right thing. So that's what I always remember about him. We remain close friends to this day. And I think the world of Michael Chertoff.
He is amazing. I just love to, when he gives a speech or when he, I just love to listen to him. He's so smart. He's so smart.
Brilliant. And he's brilliant.
He is. He really is. So let's explain a little bit about how we got to scavenger hunt. Because here you are, a young lawyer from Texas, and you land up, and explain how in the world you got to the Department of Justice on a very interesting day.
I'll just start by saying that I was hired by the Department of Justice the night before the September 11 attacks. I was practicing law in Austin, Texas at the time. I was a 3-year lawyer. I tried a bunch of cases because I made the decision early on. But my career path has always been to take risk. And I don't know where I get that, probably from my mom, but taking risk. And they paid off. I went to a law firm that was going to allow me to, where I paid a little bit less than the big law firms at the time, but that was going to allow me to try a bunch of cases, and I got to do that. And I leveraged that experience to get an interview at the department, and for whatever reason, they wanted to hire me. So fast forward, 9/11 happens, and then I'm living in Austin with my wife and our Great Dane Judge, the only real character in my book, and we pack up the truck and move to D.C. and live on Capitol Hill. And I think when you ask the question, how did scavenger hunt come about? The reason is because I was probably starry-eyed walking around D.C. wondering, how did I get here? And I was observing everything. I was just taking it in and eating it up. And I felt like I needed to put pen to paper. And so Blake is not me, but Blake Hudson, but he's a lot like me in that he came from Texas and was not a part of the in crowd, but worked his way into that crowd.
He certainly did, and you certainly did. So that story is based very much on a secret floor that you write about. So explain that, how this came about.
I love your memory, by the way. Yes. The main justice building is headquartered in Washington, D.C. It's right across from the FBI building on 9th and Pennsylvania. And the floor itself has really 7 floors. If you go in, those who get to go into the building, which are very few people because you have to pretty much work there or be a guest. When you go into the elevator banks, there's only 7 buttons and or 7 numbers of buttons. And but I kept seeing another floor from the outside. And so I asked around, and nobody really knew. And I got a custodian at some point. This would have been around early 2000s. To take me up to the top, and I learned that was the old FBI ballistics lab. So there's a hidden 8th floor in the main Justice Department building that even today, for those who haven't read my book, they still don't know exists at the department. And since I last spoke to you, I had the former number 2 official at the Department of Justice read my book, and he took me, we were downtown at a lunch, and he took me in a Suburban back to the main justice building, and he was walking me through and pointing out and saying, this is where Blake Hudson did this, this is where Blake Hudson did that. And I said, hey, you think you can find the staircase to the hidden 8th floor? And he goes, that's why I'm here. And so he found the staircase, which is still hidden, and we walked up in the dark, and we tried to get in, but it was locked. So the number 2 in the department couldn't get in. I've been up there, but it's been 20 years.
Oh, who knows what they're doing up there now? I don't know if we'd want to open that door, because a lot of strange things have happened in 20 years.
That's true.
And what we would find, I'm not sure if we'd find some skeletons, maybe. I don't know. I would be a little scared about that one. But I think you left, actually, the Department of Justice at the right time, because now you can write about all of it, and you're not under any secret clauses or something that you can't write about things. So now you can write about it, and some of it can be truth, and some of it can be made up. But sometimes the truth is really stranger than fiction.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you mentioned at the beginning of the call that Scavenger Hunt needed to be a series. And you were one of the first persons to tell me that. In my mind, I knew that I was going to be writing more books. I had probably 10 stories in my head, and I never really thought of them as being truly all Scavenger Hunt. And now, after hearing the feedback from Scavenger Hunt from many, there is this pressure to, hey, you need more Scavenger Hunt. We have to see these characters again and again, and I'm excited about that. I wasn't expecting that, and now as I'm finishing my 3rd book, which is the second in the series, I can't wait, because there's so much material to be had based upon that original concept, and the fact that people fell in love with those characters just make it all the better. Because if you don't, you can write a great story. If your characters aren't resonating with people, then you failed. And for those people to say, I need to know what happened to these characters,
I know.
It's fantastic to have somebody high up in the Department of Justice saying, almost living the life, hey, Blake was there. Blake's a fictional character, but in their mind, he was living there with them. It's really fascinating.
Blake is real. I'm sorry. Blake is real. When I finished that book, I remember it so distinctly. I finished that book and I said, and then when I talk to you, you're like, oh, this is one book. I'm going to do another book. And blah, blah, blah. But and I thought, where's your publisher? Your publisher like should be handcuffing you to a chair and say, write the next one, because everybody's going to fall in love with this book. And everybody's going to want to know what's going to happen to Blake. I knew it. I just knew it. It was so, I saw it so clearly. I was just so excited. And I remember all during the year, 2023 was a crazy year, but I remember many times I was telling people, you have to read this book because it's just so good. It's just so good. So I knew it was going to happen. I think eventually Blake would have just kept giving you headaches, knocking on, you know, your head there. Let me out.
Blake's got a lot more to do. I do love that character. I'm glad that other people do. I really appreciate your comments, because that's your first protagonist of your novel. That's your little child. I've learned not to listen to the negative reviews. Thankfully, they're not as many as the good ones. But my daughter wears it. She wears it very heavy. And so I say, you got to stay away. I don't want to hear from the, just the good reviews, because she's 18.
So she takes it seriously. Don't say anything bad about my daddy about him. Oh, this is fantastic. I think it's so wonderful that you're writing another one. I know, you know, this one from publishing wise, it came out, 18 months later. I don't know when we'll get the next Blake one. Have you finished it?
I have. So it's going to editor somewhere in the fall. And beta reading is next week. I'm back to some of my experts inside of the intelligence law enforcement community, national security community. And they actually asked to read this one. So I'm really excited about it. I've added some new members to my team that will help enhance the quality and the promotion of the book. And so we've got just really an all-star team for this. And I'll be going back to Chicago, because a lot of the book takes place in Chicago. Blake's going to be in the middle of the mafia scene this time and chasing a new kind of scavenger.
Wow.
It turned out probably better than I thought. So I'm very excited about it. But in the meantime, Homecoming Queen may end up being my favorite book. And I really hope people get a chance to take a look at that and to pour into that, because that's a special book in many different ways.
It is. It is a very special book. And I hope all of my listeners, I want them to get Homecoming Queen, a small town political thriller. And I love political thrillers anytime, but particularly small town ones. They have a very distinctive nature and you really get into it. I think it's a really wonderful book. Very well written. I love your use of words. Like, of course, you use bigly, which is now people know what it is. And I also had to mention, I like one of the words you use as a verb, bull. And I don't see that. I haven't seen that for a long time in any writing. And I love that you use it as a verb. And I don't know if that comes from you're working in the boats and navy and that kind of stuff. That's a word they use. Mm-hmm. Very much in waterways.
Yes. So you've hit on it. I'm a wordy too. When I see words that just kind of jump out, I gravitate to them. I write them down. And so bigly, I love it that you picked up on bigly, because I thought about taking that word out probably over 100 times. And it was so good. I couldn't take it out. And so I left it in. It was perfect.
It was perfect. And that's what I love when I see something that you didn't run it through some grammar program that says, oh, you can't use that word. And I loved also the way you use bull, because it's a great word and people don't use it enough. Anyway, wonderful writing as always. And I'm so happy that you were on Joy on Paper a little bit late, I think, today. But you got here, and I'm so happy that we got to talk, because I think Homecoming Queen is going to also be a winner for you. And I'm glad that you have friends in Hollywood, old school chums, because I'm sure they are already thinking about this one as a wonderful standalone maybe movie. But at some point, you're going to have a series. A streaming series, and we're going to have Blake Hudson and Judge and all of those other characters, right?
I have been talking about that, so we'll keep our fingers crossed, and I think a series is probably...
Oh, it's going to happen. I predicted it. When I predicted it, it's going to happen. I don't even worry about it. I know it, you know. So it's going to happen.
You.
Because you're just so good. There are other words I could pull out from both books that just shows I love the way you think.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I try not to do too much of it, but when I do, it makes its way on the page.
It certainly does. Chad Boudreau, I think you're fantastic. Do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes, it's myname.com. So it's ChadBoudreaux.
Yeah, Boudreaux. Such a lovely name.
Get everything and more there that you need.
Okay. Again, Chad, thank you so much for joining me on Joy on Paper. It has been an absolute joy to talk to you.
And you too, as always. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. What a guy. What a writer. Fantastic. I love this book, Homecoming Queen. It's really great. And if anybody wants to know what it's like to live through a really bad hurricane, This is a great book to read, and it's by Chad Boudreau. Bye-bye now.